it'll smell like normal, right? And then just out of nowhere, it smells like what I can only imagine, like a bag of unwiped asshole smells like. It only for like a split second, and then it's like back to normal. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell, man?
Yeah, it's one of the worst smelling places on earth.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, I'm from Oregon and Portland. Portland's getting pretty rough. You know what I mean? But I don't think anything beats Skid Row right now.
Yeah, it's about as bad as I've ever seen in the United States.
Yeah, the last time I came through here was 2018. I was here for a few days on Skid Row, and it wasn't nearly that bad. COVID really did a number, man. It's kind of sad to watch, you know, or sad to see.
You're from Oregon?
I was born and raised over in Oregon, yeah, but I've lived all over the place. I moved to Cleveland, Ohio in like 2009 because I joined a band over there. And got pretty lucky and got to tour the world. I've been to like Europe and Japan.
What was the band?
A band called Salt the Wound.
Hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, I started touring with them and yeah, just got fortunate. You know, I stayed good at my instrument. And
what do you play?
I play bass.
Hmm.
That's what I started playing, but I know how to play guitar by like default, you know? And I've played drums and I've sang in a couple bands. Primarily heavy stuff, like heavy music is, you know, the genres that I've been into.
Yep.
And yeah, but just got lucky, you know, and stayed good at my instrument and put myself out there. You know, a lot of bands need bass players, apparently, you know, good ones. And so I just got lucky and just started pushing myself. Hey, if you guys ever need a, you know, fill in or blah, 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 blah. And so I had all sorts of awesome bands hit me up that I'd go and learn their sets and travel and play death metal all over the world. It was rad. You know, cool. I consider myself very fortunate for that. But then I think I told you on the phone, I call it mosh retirement. I went into mosh retirement because I met a beautiful woman who the mother of my daughters and settled down. I tried to tour one time after my girls were born and we got from Portland to Eugene, which is only like a 2-hour drive. And I started crying. I was like, let me out of the van. I can't do this. No, my girls need me, you know? And, the guitar player for the band, Izzy, he called up my wife and he's like, Amy, you need to tell Zealand to fucking calm down, man, because he's trying to get out of here to go back to see you. And so he puts me on the phone with her and she's like, Zealand, just do it. You know, you've committed to this. We're going to be fine. I'll be fine with the girls. But I was just like heartbroken. Like, why would I leave my family? You know, and it was just really conflicting for me because I spent all of my time on the road. You know, I became very addicted to waking up in a new city every day. It's awesome.
Sometimes being a man requires being out there to conquer the world.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean?
So did you bail or did you?
No, she's like, do it. You know, you like, you know, being in a band, you know, it's the fans, you know what I mean? The people already prepaid to bought tickets to see us. And if I bailed out, then that would be backing out on them.
You have to imagine yourself back at home.
Exactly.
After having bailed.
Yeah. And then I would have felt like such shit.
Diapers,
you know,
or whatever you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, I did it right. Like I worked hard and stacked up some money. I left her with a few grand, you know, and I was only taking off. We only did like a little West Coast run. We did like 16 shows in 18 days or something like that. So it wasn't like too crazy. Drove down to SF and then played shows all the way back up to Seattle. And then, so it wasn't too bad, you know, but it was just after that, I couldn't, I have not been on tour since that tour. Oh no, I take that back. I started another band in Portland called Dead Country just a few years ago, like, yeah, 2018. And I pushed us pretty hard and got us picked up on a label. And then we did like a little short run. But by then, my wife and I had already been divorced and we were doing the champion co-parenting thing. And so, you know, and my job allowed it. So it wasn't like a big deal for me. It was actually really rad, you know, when I got back.
So even staying at home didn't work out.
Yeah, no. But yeah.
Was that because of drugs?
What's that?
The divorce?
Yeah, unfortunately, when, you know, I started, so I'll take this back a little ways. On my 10th birthday, my father made the decision to take his own life. And I, unfortunately, was the one who found him. So like my dad, I was getting this badass BMX bike for my birthday, and my dad, the night before, I watched him beat the fucking brakes off my mom, and they got into it pretty heavy. And you know, because they're addicts and alcoholics and whatnot. And I mean, I knew my parents never put a hand on me, man. I can't think of any time in my, it was weird. Like my parents never ever hit me or anything. I knew I was very loved. But it was definitely a broken home, you know. We were white trash and poor as fuck, and they had a lot of issues together, addictions, you know. And I didn't know about what had happened to my dad during his, you know, his trauma until I got older, you know, because he died when I was just a puppy, you know. But yeah, so I was supposed to get a BMX bike for my birthday, and my dad's like, whether I'm here or not, Zeeland, you can go into the garage and on that morning and you can get your bike. And so I was awake. Like, I didn't even feel like I slept that night because the cops came and took my dad, but they only held him until he could sober up a little bit. And then he snuck back into the house and I guess did what he did. But
how did he do it?
He hung himself.
And you walked in on that?
He was already dead when I walked in. But yeah, I woke up in the morning, like right before the sun, right before it got light out, you know, because I'm a December baby. So it was like winter, and that was in Sandy, Oregon. So they call it the gateway to Mount Hood. So it was kind of snowy. And I remember opening up the garage, you know, to see my bike. And then I push it open. I see there in all its beautiful glory. It was like, ah. I was like, yeah. And then the door swung open. And I was like, oh, fuck. I got this tattoo right here on my hand. It's a noose. It says 94. That's for my dad.
Wow.
But yeah, whew, man. And
how does that affect you now?
You know, you don't know how that does affect you until you get older, right? And I did a lengthy set in jail back. I did pretty much all of 2019 locked up. The end of 2018 going into all of 19, I was locked up pretty much. I had made the decision to turn myself in. I'd been dipping and, you know, dodging on these warrants that, you know, I just, because of my addiction, you know, and it's hard to, you know, obviously you don't want to go to jail or be dope sick or whatever, but I'd finally just got done, you know, peeking over my shoulder all the time. Like when you have warrants, it sucks, man. You know, you're always afraid of shit and like all weird. But, I was not able to get to see my kids. So I finally turned myself in. And I did a lot of, self-reflection. That's what jail is good for, you know, like time to work on yourself, I guess. But I was diagnosed in jail because I finally started taking my mental health a lot more seriously, you know, because of the stuff with my dad and whatnot. I knew that. So I was diagnosed with audiovisual hallucinations. They took my driver's license because of it. I was diagnosed with PTSD and severe anxiety. My anxiety cripples me sometimes. It's hard to do anything. That's why I smoke weed a lot, because of that. But yeah, so after my dad died, you know, I self-medicated. I remember, let's see, 2 days after my dad died, my dad died, right? I found him. I had to go wake my mom up. And I was like, hey, mom, you know, dad's in the garage, he's fucking dead. I probably didn't say fuck at the time, but and she's like, what are you talking about? Zeeland, go back to sleep. I'm like, no, this is real. Like, please wake up, mom. Dad's out there and he's dead. And she's like, what? And I had to, like, you know, because my mom was all beat up. And took her out there, and she, man, if there's one thing that hurts me about that whole day and that whole situation, it's just seeing what it did to my mom. You know, because I don't know, I just don't feel like she deserved that to be dealt that hand. But I lifted up his legs while she cut him down, and because he hung himself, he tied a he used a air compressor hose and tied it up into the rafters. And it always just fucked me up, man, because so my dad, he was a tall drink of water, right? He was about 6'4". 6'4" and like 160 pounds, if that puts any, you know, he was like a really tall, slender man. And he tied it way up into the attic. You know, he, when I found him, his knuckles were dragging on the ground. And so there was, he didn't hop off of nothing. It wasn't like you see it in the movies or anything. He sank down into it, right? So he could have stood up at any time, right? So that means he wanted it. You know, there was, because my dad was on the volunteer firefighter department, like, you know, in the town that I lived in, my dad was a fucking hero, you know? That's why the cops didn't give him a citation or ever for beating my mom's ass. You know, they just held him and was like, Gary, don't go back. You know, like, just try to stay out of trouble. But, they were, the paramedics, they deemed it as a, what is it? It was a accidental suicide, but they only said that because that was the only way that my mom was able to get the life insurance policy to take care of us kids or whatever, you know. And we, my mom didn't even know, which we didn't get any of it. My grandfather robbed 60 grand and my mom's family robbed the other 60 grand. So we were left with nothing in the end anyways, never saw a fucking dime of any of that. But yeah. And then, so that happened in December of 94, March of 95, my mom got arrested for having about 2/8 of weed on her, right? And we all got taken by Child Services Division, and my mom got put in jail where she had the money. She had 60 grand, because 60 grand of my dad's 120,000 was a verbal agreement between him and his father that that was to go into a growing interest account for all four of us kids for college. I'm the second of four. And he was supposed to put that aside so we'd all be taken care of in the educational department. My mom was to get the other 60 to take care of us. When she was locked up, she had to sign over her power of attorney to her sister to be able to bail her out. Nowadays, like, if you have money in your account, they'll just take your card out of your property and fucking run it, and they'll bail you out, you know? Back then, it was a little different. My mom had to sign over her power of attorney. She signed it over. My aunt emptied the bank account and left my mom in jail. We were all put in foster care because my mom still has four counts of child endangerment on her record. And so we were all put in foster care for the better part of 3.5 years.
Who raised you then?
We could say I was what you would call a troubled young man, a troubled youth, you know? I remember I had to go back to school after my dad died, right? And people are so fucking miserable, man. I went my first day back to school because my birthday is always on Christmas break. And so I had to go back to school like right before the new year or whatever, or maybe right after. I think it was right before, but, you know, this kid, like, I go back to school. That was my fourth grade year, right? And this kid's like, ha, 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 your dad killed himself. And I'm just like, what the fuck, man? And then I got called into the counselor's office. My fourth grade teacher was also the school counselor, small town. Most teachers have multiple jobs there. And he said, you know, I just wanted to tell you I'm really sorry about everything, Zeelan. And, you know, I just wanted to let you know that I'm here for you. And I know exactly what you're going through, buddy, because I almost lost my father last year to a heart attack. And I said, but you almost lost your father last year to a heart attack. You reading the paper what fucking happened? And so I picked up my chair and I fucking I started beating that dude up because I was pretty hurt by that. For somebody to try to relate to me at that time, I was just, yeah. So troubled young man for a long time. So the 2 days after. I started drinking. I missed that part. I started drinking pretty heavily at 10 years old. You know, because alcoholism is not hereditary. You know, addiction's not hereditary, but you are a product of your environment, and it is monkey see, monkey do, right? So I always saw my mom and dad drinking to, you know, see what, you know, and it seemed to help their issues, right? Even though we all know that's bullshit, more or less. But I remember D.A.R.E. when D.A.R.E. was the thing, right? Because I was just a kid coming to our school, and they're trying to pretty much get kids to snitch on their parents, right? And they show you this case that has all these drugs in it, and they're like, "Hey, have you seen any of these in your home, or are your parents doing any of these?" More than half of that case I seen at my house, you know what I mean? And my parents were doing those things. But when I got older, I came to realize that why didn't I say anything? My parents never told me to lie or anything like that, right? My parents always said, be honest. If you feel like, you need to say something to somebody, say it. Why were all these other kids like, yeah, I see this in my house. But when I said, no, even though I knew I did, when I got older, I realized those kids, I never associated that thing with anything bad. My parents somehow were fucking awesome at being able to keep all of that, if anything, they made it seem kind of awesome, so it was, I never associated drugs or anything with anything bad, because nothing bad happened because of it, but that was also not true, there's the behind the scenes, all that stuff, but you're just a kid, but I started drinking heavily at a very young age, and that, I smoked weed for the first time very, very shortly after I started drinking. My mom came to me right after she got us back. She got physical custody of us back in 97, 98, but we were still, she had physical custody, but the CSD still had like legal custody of us until we were 18. We had to have I had counselor meetings every week, because after the events that made up my childhood, my dad and all that, I kind of shut down for a while. Like, I just wouldn't talk to anybody. I was just, my therapist in jail told me that that's like a safety thing that kids do. Some people develop like multiple personality disorders to deal with their traumas or whatever, and I just built up a wall. I have my two ex-wives, a baby mama, and a bunch of exes will tell you. And my mom says, she says it's the most frightening thing, that I can just shut my feelings off, and just not care. And my mom's, and my girl's like, you're just a fucking monster. Like, it's like, no, maybe. But, you don't know, again, what that trauma does. Like, I built up this nice cold shell, but, yeah.
What is your drug now?
Man, that's hard to say. Unfortunately, I do fentanyl right now. I've been an opiate addict since I was 19. And, to anybody, whoever, if anybody sees this or whatever, man, it is the most exhausting thing you will ever do to yourself, is becoming an opiate addict. I tried really hard for a long time to not do opiates. With my upbringing, I feel like I stuck it out at 19. That was pretty good for me, because I knew myself, and I was a really horrible insomniac, because after my dad died, I didn't tell a lot of people this. I never told really anybody this until I talked to my counselor, but it was this weird thing that happened. The face that my dad made when he hung himself, right? I read into this the older I got. It's like, if you found somebody who had hung themselves, it's like one of the most grisly fucking scenes you'll ever see. Because, it forces your tongue out of your mouth, So when I saw my dad, his face, it was brutal, he had scratch marks all over him, and all of his skin was pushed up. All of his teeth were bit through his bottom lip, because you got to think like how that would work. And it forced his tongue was protruding out. Very grisly scene. And that face, I saw it on every goddamn person. Every guy, every male that I saw, if they turned around, they'd have that face. And it was the most frightening fucking thing for me when I was younger. When I found a bottle of vodka and I fucking smashed that down, you know, I probably only took like 3 pulls off of that and I was fucking wasted. But it kind of made all the visions, the things that I saw, a little bit easier to manage, you know. I always say everybody has a vice. Everybody has something that they do that makes this world a little bit easier to live, or, you know, whatever. Whether it be, you know, some people do drugs, some people exercise, some people eat, some people fuck. No vice is better or worse. I don't judge unless it has something to do with innocence. Like, you know, no weird shit with kids, man, because that's not okay. And consent is a big thing, right? So no is no and all that. But yeah.
How old are you now?
I am the ripe young age of 41. Yeah.
What's your biggest regret?
My biggest regret? Whew, fuck. So I had... man. So... I got married after the whole, you know, I started touring, I told you, and I stopped because I met this woman, the mother of my kids. I would say that she was the one, you know, like she was my high school sweetheart. We got together when I was 17 and she was 18, and we were together for a little over a year, and then she dropped me off at band practice one day, and I was like, "You're going to be back, right, babe?" She never came back. It was kind of a weird, like, I didn't know why. She left it kind of, she just hung me up. You could say, oh, I love this person, but you don't know what love actually is until that first time some bitch has just straight ripped out your heart. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know what love really is until you've had your heart broken and you're like, oh, that was it. That was love. That's what it is. That crippled me, man. I couldn't even leave my fucking bed for days, you know? She was the one. 10 years later, we reconnected on MySpace, or I think, and reconnected and decided, she's like, you know, we're supposed to be together. Like, you are the one. And I agreed. And so I, at the time, I was doing horrible things. I was pretty much a debt collector for a drug dealer. So I was just going around shaking people's pockets out for money to help my boy out. Just not giving a fuck and doing stupid shit. You know, pretty much just shutting my feelings off and whatever. And she's like, you need to, whatever you're fucking doing, you need to stop because this isn't working for you, you know, because I was a fucking wreck. And so I went back to the Oregon coast, and a friend of mine got me a hotel room and locked me in it for about 10 days where I sweated it out. Literally, there was a yellow stain of me on the bed. All the toxins that came out of my body was fucking crazy. And my problem drugs being opiates and I guess meth, but that's just kind of by default. It just kind of, it
keeps you up.
Yeah, I guess. But most of the time when I smoke meth, I'm like, why the fuck do I even do this, dude? Like, it literally, I feel like a cup of coffee works better these days, you know? For me, I don't know. And most addicts, I'm sure the two kind of come hand in hand for some reason, I guess. Yeah, because one brings you down, one wakes you up. I just feel like my body's always fighting. But so I stopped doing what she called my problem drugs, right? Meth and heroin. If I did those, it was a no-go. We couldn't be together. So I stopped. Every great once in a while, it doesn't mean I stopped using, you know, because I became an even bigger alcoholic. Because that's what her thing was, right? She liked to drink. To this day, she still drinks a fucking box of wine every night to go to bed, you know? I quit drinking quite some time ago because somehow I learned moderation with that, but still having trouble with the other things. I digress. We got married, had 2 beautiful daughters. My first daughter is Lydia Joy. I got her name tattooed right here. My ex-wife had a 3-year-old when we got together. Her name's Raina Bella. I have it tattooed right there. She's not my biological daughter, but she calls me dad, you know, or she did. My The day my daughter was born, I held my daughter, buddy. I had to, like, it was the most amazing thing. I never felt like I had purpose, real purpose in this life. You know, I was never meant to do anything, really, you know. Just, I always say my only objective was to return to the ground so this earth could use my body in better ways than this life ever could. But when I held my baby girl, I had real fucking, holy shit, this is what I'm supposed to do. Just be here for my baby and whatever she needs, make sure I'm there, you know. My kids became everything to me. I got these tattoos on Father's Day that say dad life with a little baby bottle. We had our second daughter, Sophia Lynn. And we this was in Portland. Portland, the neighborhood we were in at this time, this was in 2015, was a little rough. Like, remember when I took Raina Bell out for her first day of school? She's like, "Daddy, why is there a person drawn on, like, with chalk on the ground?" You know, I was like, "They're sidewalk angels, sweetheart. They're making sidewalk angels." You know what I mean? Like, the fuck am I supposed to tell her, man, that some dude got stabbed out here last night? No. So it was pretty rough. So we decided to move our family to the back to the Oregon coast where Amy and I had met. And we'd fallen in love and all that stuff. You know, that was like a really good place for us. But it was also where I'd grown up and done a lot of dirt and where my addictions had started. And I was trying to stay clean, obviously, at the time. I remember telling my wife, I was like, I don't know if that's going to be a good plan for me because I know everybody there and everybody there, you know, like in small towns, that's all people do is get high, you know, because there ain't shit else to do. And so she's like, "You got this, dude. You've been killing it for a long time. We got this." Her and I were secretly going through some issues because she is a God-fearing woman, as you would say, and I am not that. I am not what you would call a religious man. And so she would like beat me. She'd get all drunk and be like, "You're so stupid because you don't fucking believe in God." So we had this weird like thing because of her religious views, I guess. It never bothered me, but it really bothered her. And you know, if you ever give up doing drugs for somebody else, it's not gonna work. Straight the fuck up. I mean, I guess I'm speaking for myself. It could work for other people, but because when the chips are down, it's so easy. Be like, "Fuck you, I'm gonna get high." You know what I mean? That's kind of what happened. I called it. I told her, "If we go back there, I'm probably going to relapse." She's like, "No, you got this." Well, I didn't have it, right? I spent $700 in heroin in 5 days. Go big or go home, right? When she went to go pay the rent, we were a couple hundred bucks short. And even though I worked two full-time jobs, like I was the breadwinner, like she worked maybe 8 hours a week at Moe's, which is like the famous chowder place there, which anybody who ever sees this, don't fucking go there. It's miserable. It's all the chowders out of a can, by the way. She only worked 4 hours. Like I was working nonstop, barely got to see my kids, you know? And so I don't know why at the time I felt justified. Like, it's my fucking money. I can do whatever the fuck I want, dude. And she asked me, "Where'd the money go, Zealand?" And I just, "So how about those Yankees?" She's like, "Where'd the fucking money go, Zealand?" And I was like, "What about the Niners? They're doing good this year." You know what I mean? I couldn't own up, you know. I didn't own up to that until well after we were already divorced. But so she packed, she meant business too. And then in all of 2 days, she had sold every fucking thing inside of our house. And I had gotten us this really nice house on the coast, right? I faked every fucking invoice to get in there. Because I had to prove that I made three times the rent. The rent was $2,300. Yeah, I definitely did not make that working at a fucking Comfort Inn in a porn store at like graveyard shift. So I faked all these invoices. Thankfully, it was a private renter, not like a real estate agent, because they would have figured me out. But this lady just kind of liked us, you know? And so I snuck us into this house and it was awesome, man. But I just dropped like $2,000 and got us this bed set for our anniversary. that she really wanted. We had all this cool shit, just bought brand new washer and dryer. She sold all of it for like fucking pennies in a yard sale, took all the money, went to both my jobs, went and told them that I was shooting up heroin in the house with my kids, which was completely a lie. At that time, I was not using drugs intravenously at all. And had me fired from both my jobs, took my checks, took my money. I had to borrow money from my mom to get shipped off on a bus to Southern Oregon to go into inpatient. She told me that you are not allowed to contact me. I will not contact you. I will be in contact with your counselor. I'll give you 30 days. After 30 days, if they tell me that you are making significant signs of improvement, I might not leave your dumbass and you might still have a family. You know, because I was like, please, dude, like, don't take my kids. Like, don't take my family. On my 8th day at inpatient, I was served with divorce papers. And I was like, what the fuck? This has to be a joke or something, right? Maybe she did this before she told me that, even though I knew deep down that wasn't right. I call her up. After 2 days of me blowing her up, she finally fucking answers. She's like, what the fuck do you want, Celan? I said, so what's up? I got divorce papers. Please tell me this is a joke or something. She goes, no, fuck you, dude. I'm done. You fucking lied to me. You robbed your family. Like, you stole from your fucking girls, dude. You're an idiot. I was stupid forever fucking thinking that you would be able to fucking do anything. And no, we're done. I'm fucking done. Good luck. And hung up. So, I could have left inpatient right then, but I did 117 days in total. And that was the beginning. I spent 3 years almost to the day completely sober. No cigarettes, no coffee, nothing. And I hadn't ever done that, which was huge for me. I did the thing that not only I thought I could probably never do, but damn near everybody else who knew me, there's no fucking way Zealand could ever get sober. Well, I did it. I didn't do it for anybody else but me. That's how it worked. That's how that was able to work for me. But after I got sober, I had earned supervised visits back, moved back up to Portland from Southern Oregon, where my ex and my kids were, my soon-to-be ex-wife. And I was doing supervised visits, right? Because she got some restraining order on me for a bunch of shit that never happened. Had it sent to an address that she knew I wasn't at, because you only have 30 days to contest a restraining order. And I could have proven all of it wrong, but I didn't find out there was a restraining order until day 31. That's my luck. So I had to have supervised visits with my girls for a whole year because of the restraining order. But after we were champion, you know, after the restraining order, she couldn't do anything, you know, we got divorced. We carpooled to our own divorce together because I was like, I don't have a ride. She's like, well, you're not going to be fucking late, dude. I'll pick you up. Like, that's how we were at that time, you know, like we were really awesome about making sure that it wasn't about us. It was about what was best for our girls. And, you know, one day I remember, because I used to take my girls and my ex out every week. Every time I got paid, I'd get paid every Thursday, which was awesome. I'm a line cook. That's what I do when I have a, when I'm able to hold down a job, is I cook. I love cooking. I'd always take my girls and my ex out to dinner someplace of their choosing, because, you know, my girls are going to pick who they pick. My girls are going to pick their partners. How they see me treat a woman or their mom is how they think how a man treats a woman, right? Like, they're going to look to me for all of that, you know? So it was always very important for me to be extra nice to Amy in front of the girls, you know? Like, no matter what, I never raised my voice. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Anything that she wanted, I would do it, you know? And because my girls are going to pick their partners based on how they see me treat her, you know? So that was really big to me. And I said, one day we were all out for ice cream, and I said, hey, Amy, I spent all that money on heroin, and I'm really sorry because you didn't deserve that. at all. I didn't mean to rob from you or the girls or take from us, you know, our family. And I need to know what I could do, if there's anything I can do to ever make this up to you, you know, because you didn't deserve it. And she goes, I said, well, you know, knock on wood, if I was to relapse again, what would you like me to do? She goes, be honest with me. And that way I can try to help you, you know, and be there for you. Because when she left me, it fucking crushed me. I was like, I wrote vows for this bitch. You know what I mean? Like, how could she? I would have never left her. I'm not going to go into this like this on the things that she had done to me that I stuck through for her. But I just felt like it was so out of pocket for her to leave me at that time when I needed her the most. Right? When I had stuck around and stayed with her through some shit. And, you know, learned like, tried to put myself in her shoes. You know, there's a difference between sympathy and empathy. And she says, just tell me, you know, and then I can help you. So fast forward about 2 years, right, because that was about a year into me being clean. I had already met another young woman and who was fucking incredible. She was put together in all the ways I'm not put together, right? Like, she had money in the bank, fucking awesome credit, which my credit's like a 680 right now, and that's like the best it's ever been. So, good job, Zeeland. She was 10 years younger than me. She grew up in the same town I grew up in on the coast, and so we knew each other. And when I was in, I moved back up to Oregon in an Oxford house and was killing it, got a baller ass job cooking and stacking up money, you know, was working out, looking good, feeling good, had this banging ass fucking super attractive young lady at my side, and we decided to have my baby boy, Dante. And Hannah and I were together for about 2.5 years, I think, right? The second our son was born, a lot of things changed. She decided to not go back to work for whatever reason and kind of just sprung it on me that I was going to be working two jobs for quite some time. And I was so burnt out, man. So burnt out. You know, and I knew that I was about this close from relapsing just because, you know, like, I was just that burnt out. And I don't know what it is about opiates, but they like, it's probably some sort of chemical imbalance, I would imagine. But the opiates seem to keep me up and keep me going. And the downer or the upper seem to like fucking make me go to sleep. It's weird. I've done a shot of fucking meth and just went right to sleep. Did I do a shot of heroin? And I'm like, what's up? Let's do this, you know? And I could just feel it, you know? And I was trying really hard to not go that route, you know? And I'm sorry for that, Hannah. But yeah, like, she hit me while I was holding my baby boy one day. And I, like, closed fist, fucking got me because we were arguing. I was like, you sound like a fucking crazy person right now. Do you hear yourself? She's like, crazy? Boom. And I was holding my son, right? And I tucked him in, and I tucked him in, gave him a little kiss, wiped the blood off my nose, grabbed all my shit, left. Never went back. Threw that bitch away like a parking ticket. But I relapsed not long after I left Hannah. Sometimes I think, man, maybe I should have stuck that one out but I relapsed. I got down after I left Hannah. I moved back into a sober living because I felt myself like starting to slip. I was starting to get really down on myself. I just lost my girl. You know, there were some events that happened. This chick that I dated for a minute tried to say, because we did some webcam work, right? Like, we kind of fucked on camera for some money. And she tried telling people when we went our separate ways, she tried telling people that, like, I had drugged her and that all the videos were non-consensual, when really anybody just had to watch the video. And the videos were of her, like, beating the shit out of me and then sucking my dick. So it was like, anybody who wants to, like, if I want to just, you know, prove my innocence, just watch the fucking video. So it's kind of funny. But she tried to ruin my life, which kind of worked for her in a minute because, you know, at that time, Hannah was all pissed off at me, took my kid. So all my exes jumped on this bandwagon of me being some fucking abuser, which I'm not. Like, I know that my mom raised me to be a little bit better of a dude than that. Which it didn't work out for her in the end. It kind of fucking set me back a little bit, but, you know, I powered through it. I relapsed because I had gotten down on myself, right? And that whole thing with the abuser thing was going on, and I just felt really shitty. For whatever reason, I left the sober living house one night, and I went and shoulder tapped at a Plaid Pantry for about 2 hours before somebody finally sold me a dime bag of heroin, right? And I went behind the Plaid Pantry and I smoked it like 3 hits and it was gone. And I wasn't high. I was not high at all. All I felt was every one of my failures times 10. You know, when you relapse after having a good chunk of time clean and you do it and you don't even get high, you're like, what the fuck did I just do? I just shit 3 years of sobriety down the toilet for what? And so what did I do? Boom, I call up Amy. I said, Amy, I fucked up. I just relapsed. You told me that if it happened, to call you and tell you, because then you could help me. I really need help right now. I don't think I should have my overnights with the girls, but as long as I'm not high, I feel like I should still be able to see them. That was March of 2018. I have not seen my girl since that day. She hung up the phone on me, and when I went to call back, the number was blocked. She blocked me on Facebook. And so, 2018. I haven't seen my girls in, what's that, like 8 years? My biggest regret is not the fact that I relapsed. Thank you, man. Not the fact that I relapsed, but the fact that I was honest with her, you know? So don't think that my regret was relapsing, because I learned, if I hadn't relapsed, I wouldn't have learned all of that about myself. And I realized I did deserve to lose my wife. But I did not deserve to lose my kids. My wife told me, she said, you are the most amazing father, probably the best father I've ever seen or known, but sometimes you're just a really shitty husband. I said, I'm going to take that as a win, right? That's still a win for me. And my biggest regret was being honest with her, like she told me to be, right? I did it. Fuck yeah. I did the thing that I didn't do last time, right? And where did that get me? I've been using since.
Now you're on Skid Row.
Yeah.
What made you come down here?
Oh, buddy. Should I be real about this?
Sure.
I stole a car and I drove it to Tijuana because I was going to make some money off of it. I drove a stolen car all the way from Portland to Tijuana, allegedly. And then I got fucked. I put my trust into somebody that I only knew over the phone, right? Bring me this car, bro, and I'll put you to work. I just want to make some money so I can try to set myself up, because I want to get clean and I want to get my fucking kids back, right? Because I'm just not me without them. All this shit that I'm doing, and it's just not me. It's not who I am. I'm a good dad. I want to be a dad. I miss my girls. Skid Row. I identify with Skid Row. You know, all these people, I just sit out there and I see them all, man. And so many people from so many different walks of life, you know. I feel like everybody looks at me like they think I'm a fucking cop or something, just because I definitely stick out like a sore thumb down there. You know what I mean? People are like, I can tell you're not from around here. And I'm just like, why the fuck? I don't get it. What is it about me that's different? But whatever, because I feel like we're not that different. Probably in felonies and heartbreak and all that, right? But
what do you think people don't understand about?
I don't know.
About addiction and all that.
Ooh, well, I mean, I think that's probably the only reason that people actually fuck with me, you know, on Skid Row, because I'm a new guy, right? People are skeptical of seeing.
But listening to your story, it's very clear that drugs have ruined your life.
Oh yeah, fuck yeah, they have, absolutely.
In every way.
And blaming the drugs is like blaming the fork for making you fat. You know, it's me. I did all this. I make my own choices.
But what do you think people don't understand? Because they want to blame the drugs. Quit the drugs and your life is better. But it's much deeper than that.
It does go a lot deeper than that.
You don't want your dad hanging in the
garage. You need to. Mental health is very important to me, because I come to learn that my dad had been horribly abused and raped damn near his entire childhood at a church that his family ran. So it happened, all this horrible shit happened to him by his own family.
Do you think you somehow inherit?
So check this out. When you kill yourself, you don't get rid of your demons. You only transfer them to the people who love you. And that is, I don't care what anybody says, that's real. I inherited some of my dad's demons that day, is the way I see that, you know? And I found out that if children who have found their parent dead of suicide only has a 50% chance of not doing the same thing themselves. When I heard that, that fucked me up, man. Because my kids, you know? I don't ever want anybody to have to feel the way that I felt about that. You know, I don't want my girls fucking, yeah. So yeah, that's a big gun.
After doing 11,000 of these talks, I've learned so clearly that the apple only falls so far from the tree.
Like I said, addiction is not hereditary, but it is 150% you are a product of your environment. Absolutely. Like I said, the whole DARE thing, right? I didn't associate with anything bad because my parents never did bad shit.
Yeah, but I've also seen people who are adopted into totally different families.
Yeah.
Who just, you know, the family is straight as an arrow. Everyone's clean, going to college. Everyone's perfect A student. And that one adopted kid is a train wreck.
Yeah.
Because they came from
a broken home.
That they never met those parents.
Yep. That's crazy, huh?
So that's why I think it's almost sometimes genetic.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think that, but it's
both, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. And I live with my mom right now. I live in like a house up in Portland. The situation's crazy, man. My mom's a pretty hard addict, you know, but she's all I got. You know, my siblings, they love me. We don't really talk when I'm using. My baby sister just celebrated 11 years of sobriety, and I'm so fucking proud of her, man. She's allowed to see my girls. She told me that Lydia and Sophia love me and miss me, that they're very worried about me. But my oldest is like damn near becoming a woman now, you know? I mean, okay, maybe not, you know, because she's only like 10 or 11, but I haven't seen her since she was 5, you know? No, well, shit, I'm losing time. 8 years, if last time I saw her was 5, then she is like 13. Fuck. I used to write them every day. But no.
What are you afraid of now?
That they're not going to remember me. But they do. I was told by my sister, because I've been working really hard on just trying to stay honest, you know, and.
And you seem like a intelligent, solid citizen who wants to do the right thing.
Yeah. I mean,
stopping the drugs is not going to be an option here.
Yeah, but it's just like...
It was for your sister.
Yeah, well, I mean, so my sister, I hate to say, as much as I say you can't do it for somebody else, like, if Amy would have helped me when she said she would have, I would not, I can honestly say, if she would have tried to help me, I don't think I would have continued to use. Because when you feel like you have nothing, you feel like you have nothing to lose, right? But that's not the case, but that's how you feel. And when I lost my kids, you know, like, I've tried so hard to get them back, you know, like I paid, because I have court ordered parenting time with my children. Like, my ex is just withholding them from that. There's no, parental alienation is not illegal, but it is very, it's very much looked down upon. Like, if I was ever actually able to get Amy in court, so I have to pay $300 to file this paperwork that enforces my parenting time, right? Well, Amy, I paid it, and then Amy responded back that I was an immediate threat. Nobody had contacted me to tell me that she had responded, and you only have 30 days to contest. She kind of uses me against myself in that way, that, like, I'm not going to, you know, I filled out all the paperwork and then for a second time and went to turn it in, knowing that I had active warrants, right? An attorney calls me up and she's like, Zeeland, what the fuck are you doing? I said, what do you mean? I should be able to see my fucking girls. So you have warrants out. You know that, right? I was like, well, yeah. So what's going to happen? You're going to go to court to try to get your kids back. They're going to fucking arrest you. Oh, shit. Yeah. Probably should have thought that one through a little bit better, because that would have been embarrassing. That would not make me look like a good parent at all, you know? So, unfortunately, you know, I swear she fucking banks on it, you know? I, like, start to do good. I start to feel good about myself. I'll try to stay clean for, I'll get, like, a few months under my belt, and then something will happen, and I'm just like, yeah, fuck it, you know? I'm not like I'm going to be able to fucking get my kids back anyway, so let's go get high.
You can't allow yourself to be a victim.
Yeah.
To see yourself as a victim.
Yeah. Play the victim and you will become the victim, right?
Yeah.
But,
Zeeland, let me ask you one last question. What would you say is the most important lesson you've learned in all of this?
So when something happens to you, right? Let's say something shitty happens, right? Or, like, something bad happens, your reaction to that, whatever happens, the feeling that happens in response to whatever, you know, something happens, it makes you angry. I don't have control of that. That initial feeling, I don't get to control how that makes me feel. Like, I don't get to control that, right? I don't get to choose how that's making me feel. But the only thing that I feel I do have control over in my entire life, probably the one thing I actually have control over, is how I choose to respond to that feeling. You don't have to respond to anger. You don't have to respond to anger with being angry. Does that make sense? So if something happens that fucking sucks, I just need to... What matters most is how you walk through the fire, right? So the only way that positivity can prevail or that be a thing is if you can learn to stay positive through the negative. And so that is the biggest thing I've learned, is to just to try my best to keep my head up. And
that's a tremendously powerful tool.
It is. It's fucking rough, dude. It is so hard, but
very few people can do it.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not perfect at it yet, but at least I feel like I know, you know, because I see people out here all the time, and it breaks my fucking heart, man, that are like 60 years old that have never learned that, you know? So at least I'm one step ahead of the curve, I guess, you know? Just to stay positive and don't, I am not my mistakes, you know what I mean? Like, my scars are just a reminder that my past was real, but you know, I'm not that. Like I was saying before, I'm not a fucking monster. I know I'm a good dude. I know I'm a good dad. So just try, like, the reason we fall a little down is to learn to pick ourselves back up, right? I think Batman said that, maybe. So, yeah. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense.
An interesting talk.
Yeah.
Zealand, thank you very much for sharing it.
Thank you, Mark, for having me. I appreciate it.
You want to go back to Oregon?
Fucking A, man. I would love that.
Let's do it.